got the refugees, all stars, rubber dubbing in the club. Why Clef Jean?
Look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her, buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another 1/2 hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. E, get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me, I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My food slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half niggas at it. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a new sense, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie. Yeah.
This is Mark on AstroTalk. Are you at CITR with Marco on AstroTalk 101.9. Good afternoon. It's raining a lot. I wonder if there's anything to do with astronomy there. Probably not. So anyway, welcome. Last week I talked about citizen scientists helping NASA on various projects, and there's quite a few of them. I was interested in the one about Einstein, and I'll get to you on those. Maybe I'll join one and then I'll tell you how I do on it. So to continue on, here's another one about citizen scientists. Lend thousands of hours of volunteer work, and there's sometimes thousands of them on a project. So I'm going to talk about a particular project today about penguins in the Antarctic. The website is www.penguinmap.com. That's easy, isn't it? Penguinmap.com. So the article is dated October 25th. It is, Tuesday. Today's 27th. So it's a few days old. It's on NASA's www.nasa.gov, and it's a long title, so I'm not going to read it to you, but if you want to go to nasa.gov, you can just say penguin conservation and citizen scientists lend a hand in penguin conservation. So this is the title of the article, dated October 25th. NASA collaboration allows citizen scientists to lend a hand in penguin conservation. So I'll start reading the article now. It shows a nice Adelaide penguin nesting on the Antarctic peninsula, and aren't penguins cute? So here's the story. Tracking penguin populations in Antarctica is a critical component of understanding environmental changes in the region. Now, thanks to a collaboration between NASA and Stony Brook University, citizen scientists can lend a hand through the use of a new interactive and user-friendly website that tracks an Arctic penguin population and provides information to scientists. So remember, NASA has lots of satellites, or they can use a lot of satellites from the U.S. military or just belonging to the U.S. to track a lot of things about the environment on Earth. So they're helping. For example, the hurricanes or fires or a lot of things like that. So back to the story. The tool, known as MAPPPD, so that's mapping application for penguin populations and projected dynamics, MAPPPD, available at www.penguincamp.com. So that's www.penguinmap.com. Is the first of its kind to give citizen scientists a lens into the world of scientists working to understand how environmental change, fishing, and tourism may be affecting Antarctica's ionic birds. I was reading something the other day about Borneo, where there's lots of problems there, and there's been fires there for a few years, really bad fires due to climate change. So hopefully NASA can help get these things under control. Now, back to the article. I'm quoting now Professor Heather Lynch, Associate Professor of Ecology and Evolution at Stony Brook University, and she led the project. End quote. The launch of this website has the potential to greatly improve management and collaboration around the Antarctic. MAPPPD, which again is Mapping Application for Penguin Populations and Projected Dynamics, contains data for approximately 1,300 historical and current surveys in over 700 sites around the Antarctic continent. These data, or is it data, whatever you like, come primarily from published literature, though population estimates based on satellite imagery are also used by researchers and represents a growing component of MAPS utility. Imagine, wouldn't that be a cool job, looking at satellite data, trying to count how many penguins there are? Well, I guess they're estimates, so they estimate it somehow, but that would be fun, counting penguins. I never thought of that. Lynch, this is Professor Heather Lynch, along with Matthew Schwaller of NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, teamed up with Washington, D.C.-based NGO Oceanites, Inc. to develop the new website, which will allow scientists and policymakers to make conservation decisions regarding the Antarctic environment. Now, isn't that terrible if the penguins are used to having nice cold environment, a lot of ice, and then it's melting? Isn't that bad? Back to the story. Antarctica has always been a challenging place to work, and penguin researchers have struggled to track populations of penguins breeding in Antarctica's most remote areas. But recent developments in using satellite imagery from NASA and other sources have paved the way for a more complete understanding of where penguins breed and how their populations might be changing. Now, this is interesting. While the satellite imagery cannot detect the penguins themselves, it can detect the large, I don't know what this word means, but it's spelled G-U-A-N-O, guano stains the penguins produce while incubating their nests. Lynch and her team have been able to use the imagery to locate new colonies of penguins that no one knew existed, some of which are amongst the largest in the world. The website also allows anyone to query all publicly available penguin census data. Any user can also access the latest modeled population estimates for Adelaide penguins around the Antarctic continent, as well as the probability of presence and breeding for all other avian species on the Antarctic peninsula. So, wouldn't that be cute to look at penguins all the time? Now, what I remember from last week, the citizen science efforts were involved, citizen scientists actually being allowed access to NASA data, and the one article that caught my eye and my ear last week was that the NASA team didn't have imaging team. So what happens, the NASA scientists allow their data to be published openly. People can access this data. And what the citizen scientists have been doing is they've been making pictures and photographs because the NASA does not have a imaging team. So they're helping a lot. Now here it doesn't say how the citizen scientists are, what they're doing with data if they're allowed access to it. It's not saying. It's just saying that allows anyone to query all publicly available penguin census data. So what does that mean? Do the citizen scientists do something with that data? Doesn't say in this story right here. But in the other effort, the citizen scientists were actually doing things with the data, producing pictures or discovering things like our Michelle Kunimoto did. Our Michelle Kunimoto accessed data available from NASA, and she discovered four new planets. So this article's not saying what the citizen scientists do with the data or what they can do with the data. So I'll continue on with the story. Lynch also explained, this is Professor Heather Lynch from Stony Brook University, a college and ecology and evolution associate professor. Lynch also explained that researchers with data to contribute to MAP have a variety do so. So we'll see. How do they do it? As do keen-eyed tourists who in the summer month actually outnumber scientists in the region and can contribute important information through bird checklists and photographs. Additionally, MAPS utility as a data hub for Antarctic penguin biologists will grow as new data sets are uncovered and can be integrated into population models that both describe past trends and may be used to predict future trends. Okay, so I guess they're taking the data, looking at trends, what has happened in the past, what's going to happen in the future, what's happening now. So maybe the citizen scientists are contributing that way, but still doesn't say how. The easy-to-use interface includes a number of informative outputs that are immediately available for environmental impact assessments or scientific reports. The website also contains fact sheets on the four penguin species for which count data are available, links to relevant publications, and information about how users can contribute their own data. So I guess if you go to the website, and maybe I will one day, I have to bring a little notebook here and write these things down because I keep saying I'm going to do something, and then I forget because I don't note it down. So that's what I got to do. I got to write down www.penguincamp.com and see what happens. Okay, so that was a NASA website. Now I'm going to get on to another article. Now this is interesting. The nearest star system is a is that the right word? Trinary? Binary is two. A triple. Okay, I'll just say triple star system. The Alpha Centauri system. So this is an article from NASA, October 25th, 2016, about exoplanets, and the title of the article is Study. Planet orbiting nearest star could be habitable. This is an artist's impression of a view of the surface of the planet Proxima B, orbiting the red dwarf star Proxima Centauri, the closest star to the solar system. I believe it's about 4.2 to 4.3 light years away. So I would think it's 4.3, but I think it's something like 4.26. See, the three stars orbit at different distances from the sun, so there's pretty close to 4.3. Anyway, the double star Alpha Centauri AB also appears in the image. Proxima B is a little more massive than the Earth, and orbits in the habitable zone around Proxima Centauri, where the temperature is suitable for liquid water to exist on its surface. So I'm going to get back to this when I take a break. So I'm going to, as I said, take a break, then I'll be back to talk about our nearest star system, Proxima Centauri, or the Centauri star system. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Attention, class, settle down. My name is Chris Connolly from the band Hot Panda, also known as your professor. Let's get one thing straight. If there's some of you that think this class is going to be a walk of the cake or a flop about in the park, you are sadly mistaken. Half of you will drop out, and the other half of you will wish that you were dead. If I could offer any advice to those of you still hell-bent on attempting to pass my class, it would simply be to keep your radio tuned to CITR 101.9 when you're in Vancouver.
You've stated that you believe there could be an infinite number of parallel universes. Does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you?
Yes, and also a universe where you're funny.
Okay, all right. Look, if you're so smart, what number am I thinking
13.
Of? 13. It was 13. I was thinking of 13. Okay, that was a lucky guess. What am I thinking right now?
That you've been a huge disappointment for your family.
I wasn't thinking that.
Welcome back. This is Marco and Astro Talk. I'm trying to play a song, and it just something's happening. It's not playing. So, if there was a bit of dead air there, I apologize for it. Okay, so back to our story. It's a article on NASA and NASA website, www.nasa.gov, and it's dated October 25th, and it said, "Study: Planet orbiting nearest star could be habitable." Now we're talking about the nearest star system. It's a three-star system, triple star system. And two of the stars orbit around each other very tightly, and the other third one kind of orbits around the other two a bit farther away. So now I'm going to read the article. A rocky extrasolar planet with a mass similar to Earth was recently detected around Proxima Centauri, the nearest star to our sun. This planet, called Proxima B, is in an orbit that would allow it to have liquid water on its surface, thus raising the question of its habitability. That's a big word, habitability. Remember when I lived in Thailand, there's lots of big words and lots of names are very long. They're really, really long. So I should be able to say that word because I've had practice. Now back to the article. In a study to be published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, an international team led by researchers at the Marseille Astrophysical Laboratory, I would guess that's in France, in Marseille, has determined the planet's dimensions and properties of its surface, which actually favor its habitability. The team says Proxima B could be an ocean planet with an ocean covering its entire surface. The water perhaps similar to that of subsurface oceans detected inside icy moons around Jupiter and Saturn. The researchers also show that Proxima B's composition might resemble Mercury's, with a metal core making up two-thirds of the mass of the planet. Now that's quite a bit. Wonder how much percentage the Earth's core makes up of the Earth's mass. These results provide the basis for future studies to determine the habitability of Proxima B. Proxima Centauri, the star nearest the Sun, has a planetary system consisting of at least one planet. The new study analyzes and supplements earlier observations. These new measurements show that this planet, named Proxima Centauri B, or simply Proxima B, has a mass close to that of Earth. It's about 1.3 times Earth's mass, and orbits a star at a distance of 0.05 astronomical units, one-tenth of the Sun-Mercury distance. That's very close. Contrary to what one might think, such a small distance does not imply a high temperature on the surface of Proxima B, because the host star, which I was about to say, Proxima Centauri, is a red dwarf with a mass and radius that are only one-tenth that of the Sun and a brightness 1,000 times smaller than the Sun. So remember, the I think Jupiter gets about 5% of the sunlight that Earth does. And when you move farther out, it could be actually 3 or 4%. Saturn gets even less. So just because it's so close doesn't mean that it is not a habitable, potentially habitable planet, because the star is a very small star. It doesn't give off a lot of heat. Proxima B is in the habitable zone of its star and may harbor liquid water at its surface. However, very little is known about Proxima B, particularly its radius. I wonder why they don't know that. They should know that. It is therefore impossible to know what the planet looks like or what it is made of. The radius measurement of an exoplanet is normally done during transit when it eclipses star, but Proxima B is not known to transit. Oh, that's interesting. So I thought because it was close, it would be easier to find out information about it. But just like they say now, it doesn't transit. I wonder why it doesn't. Maybe because we're not face on. So there's another way to estimate the radius of a planet. If we know its mass, we we can simulate the behavior of the constituent materials. This is the method used by a French-American team of researchers from the Marseille Astrophysics Laboratory and the Department of Astronomy at Cornell University. With the help of a model of internal structure, they explored the different compositions that could be associated with Proxima B and deduced the corresponding values of the radius of the planet. When they make a model of the internal structure, they don't know anything about the planet, then they're assuming certain things, so they're going to, their results are coming from what they've put into this model. If they don't know anything about the planet or the environment, how can they make an accurate model? So their results could be superfluous, I think anyway. With the help of a model of internal structure, they explored the different compositions that could be associated with Proxima B and deduced the corresponding values for the radius of the planet. They restricted their study to the case of a potentially habitable planet, simulating dense and solid planets formed with a metallic core and rocky mantle found in terrestrial planets in our solar system. They also allowed the incorporation of a large mass of water in their composition. Now, the solar system we have, of course we know this, we have one sun. So we have all these planets, these asteroids, these meteors, all these other things floating around out there. How would a solar system of a three-star planet be? That would be interesting. Be kind of different, because the three suns interact. Their gravity tugs on things in a different way. So that would be interesting to try to get a model of that solar system. Now, I'm going to continue with the last sentence and go on to the next paragraph. Our last two sentences. They restricted their study to the case of potentially habitable planets, simulating dense and solid planets formed with a metallic core and rocky mantle found in terrestrial planets in our solar system. They also allowed the incorporation of a large mass of water in their composition. Next paragraph. These assumptions allow a wide variety of compositions for Proxima B. The radius of the planet may vary between 0.94 and 1.4 times the radius of the Earth. I'm pausing for a second. They don't know much about the radius or the size of the planet, but they seem to have, they say the planet weighs about 1.3 times the Earth. So they know something about the planet. The radius of the planet may vary between 0.94 and 1.4 times the radius of the Earth, which is almost 4,000 miles or 6,400 kilometers. The study shows that Proxima B has a minimum radius of 3,722 miles, and the only way to almost 6,000 kilometers, and the only way to get this value is to have a very dense planet consisting of a metal core with a mass equal to 65% of the planet, the rest being rocky mantle formed of silicate. The boundary between these two materials is then located about 932 miles or 1,400 kilometers deep. With such a composition, Proxima B is very close to the planet Mercury, which also has a very solid metal core. This first case does not exclude the presence of water on the surface of the planet, as on Earth, where the water body does not exceed 0.05% of the mass of the planet. In contrast, Proxima B can also have a radius of 543 miles, or 8,120 kilometers, provided that it is composed of 50% rock surrounded by 50% water. In this case, Proxima B would be covered by a single liquid ocean, 124 miles, or 200 kilometers deep. Below, the pressure would be so strong that liquid water would turn into high-pressure ice before reaching the boundary with the mantle to 1,126 miles, or 3,100 kilometers deep. In these extreme cases, a thin gas atmosphere could cover the planet, as on Earth, making Proxima B potentially habitable. So there's a lot of assumptions going into this model. In one case, they think, well, the rocky core must be 65 degrees the mass of the planet. And another model, they're saying, well, maybe it's 50%. So with 50% water, so it's really hard to tell. It's very strange how they don't know these things. And I guess because they're saying the planet Proxima B doesn't transit its sun. Now I wonder how that could happen, because on any angle, it should transit its sun, at least I thought. Okay. So such findings provide, back to the article, such findings provide important additional information to different composition scenarios that had been proposed for Proxima B. Some involve a completely dry planet, while others permit the presence of a significant amount of water in its composition. The work of the research team included providing an estimate of the radius of the planet for each of these scenarios. Similarly, this would restrict the amount of water available in Proxima B, where water is prone to evaporation by ultraviolet and X-rays from the host star, which are much more violent than those from the sun. Future observations of Proxima Centauri will refine this study. In particular, the measurement of stellar abundances of heavy elements, which are magnesium, iron, silicon, will decrease the number of possible compositions for Proxima B, allowing determination for more accurate radius of Proxima B. So now I'm going to go to the, it's called http://exoplanets.nasa.gov. I'm going to that website now, and NASA's search for another planet. That's what it says. So https://exoplanets.nasa.gov, and it shows about all information about lots of exoplanets. So far there are, on the bottom of the page, it says there's 3,402 confirmed exoplanets, 4,696 additional candidates, 2,534 solar systems, and something it says here, 348 terrestrial. I guess that means 348 of the planets have a rock composition, not liquid. Okay, so I was going to look at this article today. It's not enough time. It says, NASA missions harvest a parcel of pumpkin stars. Astronomers using observation from NASA's Kepler and Swift missions have discovered a batch of rapidly spinning stars that produce X-rays at more than 100 times the peak levels ever seen from the sun. The stars, which spin so fast they've been squashed into pumpkin-like shapes, are thought to be the result of close binary systems where two sun-like stars merge. So these 18 stars rotate in just a few days on average, while the sun takes nearly a month, said Stephen Howell, a senior research scientist at NASA's Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California, and the leader of the team. The rapid rotation amplifies the same kind of activity we see on the sun, such as sunspots and solar flares, and essentially sends it into overdrive. The most extreme member of the group, a K-type orange giant, dubbed Big S Small W 71, is more than 10 times larger than the sun, and it rotates in just 5 days. It produces X-ray emissions 4,000 times greater than the sun does at solar maximum. Now imagine how we're on the Earth now. We're in a habitable planet, and so many stars in the not just in the solar system, outside of our solar system, there could be like these stars producing 4,000 times the amount of X-rays. Now, could that affect the planet, and could it spawn life? So there's so many things. You have these big stars, stars that explode, stars that are in pairs, stars that rotate or that exist in three or four in one system. They rotate even five. So giant stars, supernova X-rays, neutron stars, all kinds of things out in the solar system. It's a dangerous place. So we're very lucky here on Earth. We have one nice little sun that's smiling and winking us all the time and giving us light, but not in here in Vancouver. Okay, so thank you for listening. I'm just going to read one more paragraph because there is somebody, I think, coming in for the next show, so I don't want to take their time. These rare stars were found as part of an X-ray study of the original Kepler field of view, a patch of the sky comprising parts of the constellation Cygnus and Lyra from May 2009 to May 2013. Kepler measured the brightness of more than 1,500 stars in this region to detect the regular dimming from planets passing in front of their host stars. The mission was immensely successful, netting more than 2,300 confirmed exoplanets and nearly 5,000 candidates to date. An ongoing extended mission called K2 continues this work in areas of the sky located along the ecliptic, the plane of Earth's orbit around the Sun. So I'm going to end now. I don't want to be here when the next people come in for their show. I could actually read this article, but I don't want to step on other people's time. So thank you for listening. Maybe I'll try to do more of it next time. So this is Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. I'm sorry. I said I was going to get an interview on. I will for sure by next week. I was too busy. So have a nice week. Goodbye.